Right, but right now, let's bring in the animals.
Yes, and welcome to Animal Voices. Pope Benedict, the present Pope, told German journalist Peter S. Seewald that animals must be respected as our companions in creation. While it is licit to use them for food, we cannot just do whatever we want with them. This degrading of living creatures to a commodity seems to me, in fact, to contradict the relationship of mutuality that comes across in the Bible. That's the words of Pope Benedict, the Catholic Pope. And I have another wonderful quote here, which is from Teilhard de Chardin, who was a Jesuit priest, and he said, "We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience." You're listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, 102.7 FM in Vancouver, which is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-supported community radio station. We are located in the heart of Vancouver, downtown East Side. Co-op Radio is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide space for the underrepresented and marginalized communities. And sometimes we feel the animals are those marginalized communities. Alan Jensen is our technician today. Thank you, Alan Jensen, for always being available here. My name is Carl Loskin, and in the studio today, we have co-host Marge Adams. Hi, Marge.
Hello, Carl. And I have a little quote I'd like to read right now, and it's taken from Soup for the Pet Lover's Soul. Power lies in the wisdom and understanding of one's role in the great mystery and in honoring every living creature as a teacher. And that was written by Jamie Sands and David Carson.
Yes, and shortly we'll be speaking with Jane Lawton, who is the executive director of the Jane Goodall Institute of Canada, about saving chimpanzees in Africa. At the half-hour mark, we'll be speaking with Suleiman, who is a world events psychic, spiritual receiver, and lover of animals, and we will explore the issue of whether animals have souls. Well, Alan, we know we got our guest waiting, but maybe you can just give we have important news which needs to be covered. So over to you, Alan, just shortly.
Thanks. Very quickly, this is Co-op Radio's fall membership drive, the Autumn Airlift. One of the two times of the year the Co-op Radio goes on the air and asks for your support. Throughout the year, you don't get advertising on Co-op Radio. We don't interrupt our great programming with all kinds of annoying ads. And we don't get support either from government, as well as not getting support from commercial businesses. We get support from you, the listeners, the people out there who understand the benefit, the huge advantage of having a community radio station to listen to that brings you programming like the programming we're hearing today on this show, but 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round. Co-op Radio brings you interesting, alternative, critical programming, great music, current affairs, arts programming, programming from the community, about our community, and about what's going on in the world, too. We certainly have a number of programs that deal with world issues, world music, and so on. But essentially, we are a community radio station that reflects the idea of community and brings in the community. All the programmers here are volunteers, and they make sure that you get a different, unbiased point of view. That is, unbiased in terms of not getting the version of big business about everything. We aren't controlled by big business, so we don't have that agenda to worry about, and we're not controlled by the government, so we don't have to worry about that. We're controlled by you, the listeners, the people out there who become members of Co-op Radio. So we have people on the phone, 684-8494, area code 604, 684-8494. And I know our first guest is connected to the Jane Goodall Institute, and we have a book. If anybody's want, I have one copy of this book called Building an Ark, 101 Solutions to Animal Suffering by Ethan Smith with Guy Dauncey. And the foreword to this book is by Jane Goodall. So if you'd like this book, you'd better phone soon at 684-8494, and you can have a copy of this book. The only cup. I do have another book called Stain of the Sea about West Coast salmon farming, prefaced by David Suzuki and Terry Glavin. So if you're interested in either of these books, call up and tell John, who's on the phones, and he'll make them available to you for your membership. But I'll tell you more about the drive as the program progresses. But first, I'll just remind you of the phone number, area code 604-684-8494, and we'll go back now to Carl and our guest.
Welcome, Jane Lawton. She is the Executive Director of the Jane Goodall Institute of Canada, based in Toronto. Welcome to Animal Voices, Jane Lawton.
Thank you, Carl. It's nice to be here.
Yes, and you know, Dr. Jane Goodall will be speaking in Vancouver this coming week, and maybe you can tell us about that. But maybe, first of all, give us an overview of this world-renowned figure for Dr. Jane Goodall, the research she did, and how she's saving many chimpanzees in Africa.
Of course. I think probably most of your listeners know a little bit about Jane Goodall and the fact that she is one of the world's most famous primatologists. She captured our imagination in the 1970s when her research at Gombe in Tanzania on chimpanzees was, you know, all over the pages of National Geographic and started to be broadcast around the world. She really, with the work that she did at Gombe and the research into chimpanzees, which continues today, she really changed the way we look at the human relationship to animal, to other animal species, and made us rethink how we set ourselves apart from all other species. So very, very important research. And then, you know, today Dr. Goodall has really, her horizons have expanded so much more. In 1977, she founded the Jane Goodall Institute for Wildlife Research, Conservation, and Education. And initially, the Institute's mandate was to support the ongoing research that she started in Tanzania. But it very quickly evolved as Dr. Goodall realized the incredible need that there was to start protecting species in Africa. She realized the incredible level of habitat loss that was going on. That was very evident around her research area in Tanzania. And she began to realize that if something wasn't done soon, chimpanzees would actually be on the brink of extinction, which in fact they are today.
Now, you're involved with three key areas in Africa. So maybe you can just run through, give us an idea of what's happening in each one of them.
I can, and I'd just like to, before I go into that, I'd just like to sort of give people a bit of perspective on the situation for chimpanzees in Africa. There are, you know, when Dr. Goodall started her research, there were estimated to be, you know, 1 million to 2 million chimpanzees in Africa. Today, they're looking at about 150,000 to 200,000. So it's been an incredible decline. You know, these are our closest animal relatives. So, you know, really, if we can't save chimps, then the future is looking a little bleak for us. And the biggest threats to their survival currently are loss of habitat, obviously, as human populations grow in various parts of Africa, but also the increasingly commercialized bushmeat trade through which chimpanzees are taken, hunted, and killed for meat. So, you know, I think that astonishes a lot of people that they don't realize that in fact is currently the biggest single threat to their survival. So that kind of leads me into what we are supporting in Africa in terms of chimpanzee protection. The Jane Goodall Institute has projects in a number of different African countries. The Jane Goodall Institute of Canada, and we're just a branch of the institutes around the world, is supporting three key areas. And those areas are a conservation program around Gombe Stream in Tanzania. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this is where Dr. Goodall started her initial research on chimps. There is a national park there that's protected, but the area around the park has become incredibly deforested. And so what we do, what the Institute does, is work with the local communities. It's an approach called community-centered conservation. We look at their needs and how we can help them to meet those needs in the areas of health and education and income generation. And that's having incredible success. There are actually some villages in that area who have been able to improve their own livelihoods to the extent that they are now giving back some areas of their own land to be included as part of a conservation buffer around Gombe Stream. So this has been a tremendous success, and the Canadian branch of the Jane Goodall Institute is really, really proud to have been part of that. We have supported, in particular, a microcredit program that helps mostly women, but also men in the villages surrounding the park to get small loans that they can either set up a new business or invest in their existing business or farming and improve their own incomes in that way. It's similar to the microcredit story in other parts of the world. It's quite astonishing what a $50 or $100 loan can do. And the repayment rate is about 98%. So it's pretty extraordinary.
So it's so important what you do, because you've involved the community to try and save the habitat of the endangered chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. And once you have these people working together, they'll band together against poaching and bushmeat, which just seems so strange. I mean, gosh, how people can do that. And but it's also partly an effort. I think Gombe's in Tanzania. It's also seen by locals as a method of subsistence food for them. But if they can see that what is being provided for preserving the chimpanzees is a greater source of their well-being, then this is just a magical thing you've done.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly, from our perspective, the only way to conserve habitat in Africa, where communities are very poor, to work with community. It's simply not possible to do it otherwise. But I should just clarify that, in fact, in Tanzania, where the Gombe project is, bushmeat hunting is not a significant threat to chimpanzees there. It is a very significant threat in the western portion of Uganda, but mostly in the Republic of Congo and the DRC, where we're working. In those areas, it is big. And when I said it's the increasingly commercialized bushmeat trade, that's where the key is, because when it was a form of subsistence for local communities living in the forest, mm-hmm. you know, there was a balance there, a certain balance. Where it's become out of balance is where, for example, in the Republic of Congo, there are increasingly large areas that are being opened up to international logging companies. And when the roads are cut into the forest, previously inaccessible areas of forest are now accessible, there is a need to find food for the logging camps. But it's also possible to take the bigger species like chimpanzees and gorillas out. And those species tend to be shipped more. They're expensive. They're rare. They're expensive. They tend to be shipped to the cities. And there has even been documentation of those species being shipped, killed, butchered, and then shipped overseas. So there's actually an international trade in bushmeat.
So what are you actually doing in the Congo?
In the Congo, we support a chimpanzee sanctuary, which is called Chimpunga, and it's in the southern portion of the country on the coast. And it's actually quite an amazing area. The sanctuary is relatively small, but it's part of an 18,000-acre reserve. The population density in the area is quite low, so there's a real conservation opportunity. We have more than 140 chimpanzees at this sanctuary, and those chimps are almost exclusively orphans of the bushmeat trade. So that means that typically what happens is that their parents are killed. The infants are prized off the mother's body. They're not typically killed for meat because they're too small to be worth anything, but they are worth something for the pet trade. So they're taken to market, and at that point, that's when they're most likely to be confiscated. It is actually illegal to kill chimpanzees and to trade in chimpanzees in these countries, but it's difficult to enforce. So once they're taken to market, they're confiscated and then often brought to the Jane Goodall Institute. So we've seen, you know, in the past year, new arrivals, 40 to 50 new arrivals at our sanctuary, which gives a sense that's obviously just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's going on out there.
So is there a program to rehabilitate them into the forest?
We would love to do that. It's not a simple process, particularly for animals like chimpanzees who are very, very easily habituated. So they're very used to human presence. They're also very unused to surviving in the wild and particularly to dealing with other wild chimpanzees. And there are, in that area in Congo, there are many wild chimpanzees in the forest. But we are currently undertaking a feasibility study to see how many of the chimps we can rehabilitate, and we're working with the government of Congo to identify some pre-release sites for these chimps, which is quite fascinating. They're actually island sites on a river. And the great thing about it is that they will be safe there. They won't have access to humans. They won't be exposed to other wild chimpanzees. And they'll have an opportunity to start learning how to care for themselves.
Now, you're also in Uganda.
We are. The Institute, Canadian Institute, is mostly supporting environmental education in Uganda. Uganda is a bit of a different situation from the Republic of Congo. It's more densely populated. There are wild chimpanzees there, but the populations are smaller. And they're increasingly under threat from habitat loss. So what our programs do, the Canadian Institute is supporting the introduction of the Roots and Shoots Environmental and Humanitarian Education Program, which is one of Jane Goodall's key projects. We're supporting the introduction of that program to Uganda. And we've been supporting it about 3 years now, and it's actually spread to more than 60 schools around Uganda. And these schools are very, very active in the program. Their young people get engaged, usually with a teacher mentor, in improving the situation for people, animals, and the environment in their communities. So it's a great program, and through that you get the beginnings of young people, young Africans beginning to understand what their connection to their environment is, how they can begin to make a difference. So it's very interesting.
So now Dr. Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots program is here at the school, here in the schools in Vancouver, I know that, and all over Canada probably.
That's correct, yes. We've been running the Roots and Shoots program in Canada for several years now. It obviously operates a little bit differently here than it does in African schools, but the idea is the same, that young people can, through the program, be inspired and empowered to make change in their own communities. And the nice thing about the program is it's not just about animals and it's not just about the environment. It's a very holistic program. It's all about the connections between people, animals, and the environment. And young people basically take the lead in the program. They identify the issues in their community that they want to address, and they, with our support, find ways in which to do that. So it can be anything from going and volunteering at an old people's home, through to cleaning up a stream, through to doing a fundraiser for the local Humane Society, anything like that, and much bigger projects as well. And we now have, actually, it's been wonderful over the last few months. We started with, we had about 50 groups in January of this year, and we now have about 160 groups across Canada.
Wonderful. We're talking to Jane Lawton, who is the Executive Director of the Jane Goodall Institute of Canada, janegoodall.ca. Now, when you spoke about the mothers, chimpanzees being shot for bushmeat, which bushmeat means they're going to eat the chimpanzee, But then there's the babies, of course, are orphaned, and you're taking care of many of those orphaned chimpanzees. But maybe you can just say something about chimpanzees in research and how widespread is that in North America?
Well, chimpanzees are still being used in research in some parts of the United States. They are not being used in Canada. They haven't been for many, many years. But interestingly enough, I just tried to find out whether or not what the legislation around that was. And there is no legislation in Canada currently that would prevent great apes being used in research. They haven't been since the 1970s, but that doesn't mean it couldn't happen. And Dr. Goodall, in fact, just recently wrote an editorial in the Vancouver Sun on this topic. Particularly, it was actually addressed from the standpoint of commenting on the recent legislation that the Spanish Parliament is looking to put in place that would confer limited human rights on chimpanzees. And Dr. Goodall, you know, obviously is supportive of that, but her real feeling is that we need to focus on some of the injustices that are happening around us, not worry too much about the rights issues, but look at approaching how we're dealing with great apes and all primates and all animal species from a humane perspective.
Thank you.
It's a very difficult topic, and obviously the Institute is certainly interested in making sure that that great apes are not used in research in any way in Canada in the future.
Thank you, Jane Lawton. Co-host Marge Adams has a question for you.
Oh. Yes. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Mark.
I'm interested in reintroducing chimpanzees, which have been taken from their mothers shortly after birth, probably, and not having wild chimps there on the island to introduce them back to the ways of the wild. How do you do it?
Well, to be honest, I'm not an expert in that. The chimps that we have at the Chimpunga Sanctuary have a sort of a semi-natural experience. Many of them, they're in large outdoor compounds, so they forage in the forest all day. They come in at night. They have a sort of nest that they come to. I don't know if you know, but chimpanzees make a nest every night in the wild from leaves, so they make a new bed every night. We bring them in to our compound, and they sleep in the same nest, but they get a similar experience. So they have had a semi-natural experience at the sanctuary. Some of them have come as older chimpanzees, others as small infants. And the problem with having them introduced by wild chimpanzees is that wild chimpanzees are very tribal, and they don't take easily to newcomers joining their group. So that's actually been one of the key issues with reintroduction programs, is that when chimps are reintroduced to an area where there are wild chimpanzees, you run a huge risk of them actually just being killed by the wild population.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Now, Jane Lawton, Dr. Jane Goodall will be speaking in Vancouver this coming week, and that inspired us to have you on there, and thank you for all the wonderful information. But the key thing is to meet Dr. Jane Goodall. She's just such a magnificent person with such an enormous compassionate voice, and you know, I actually love her. I think she's just magical. I'm so in love with her. But people will have the opportunity to speak to meet her, and maybe you can give us the details of the event, and I believe there are still some tickets available.
There are tickets available. We would love it if people would rush to Ticketmaster.ca and purchase tickets. Dr. Goodall will be speaking at the Center in Vancouver for the Performing Arts on Thursday, October 30th at 7 p.m. And the center is at 777 Homer Street. There are tickets available on Ticketmaster.ca, as I said. And in addition to the regular price tickets, there are a few tickets left, very few, but some, that would entitle the holders to come to a private reception with Dr. Goodall prior to the lecture. So please do go and purchase tickets for this event. As you were saying, Carl, it's quite an unusual presentation. People come away absolutely inspired and somewhat mesmerized by Dr. Goodall's words. She will speak about a little bit about her research, about the tremendous need for conservation. But most of all, it's very positive, uplifting, inspiring talk that outlines why Dr. Goodall feels we still have incredible reason for hope that we can save the planet, that future generations will live in a world far, far better than the one we're living in today.
Thank you, Jane Lawton, for representing so well Dr. Jane Goodall. And you know, I attended one of her presentations, and she was talking about Tarzan, and she was jealous of the other Jane.
That's
and
right.
I'm So now you're very appropriate to run the Jane Goodall Institute operations in Toronto. Thank you for being on Animal Voices.
Thank you very much.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Well, yes, we're going to be playing one of the excerpts from Dana Lyons and Dr. Jane Goodall, one of her stories. But before we do that, over to Alan, and he has a really important message for all of us.
It's very important indeed. You're hearing this amazing program, and you've heard Jane Goodall on Co-op Radio on this program and on others more than once in the past, as well as many other people who speak on similar issues and all kinds of other issues. But Co-op Radio can only continue to bring you this sort of programming if you bring a little money to Co-op Radio, if you take a little step towards your phone or grab your cell phone wherever you put it and give us a call at area code 604-684-8494 and say, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to join Co-op Radio. I'm going to make a donation. I'm going to subscribe to this radio station. You probably subscribe to all kinds of other things, like your cable for your TV, or like your internet connection, or like your telephone or your newspaper or whatever. If you consider how much you spend on other subscriptions, it's quite a bit. And Co-op Radio doesn't cost you anywhere near that much, but it brings you a whole lot of great programming all year round, whatever your interests are. And you can hear a program like this, and then you can hear a great music program later today and listen to the Red Eye Show tomorrow morning where they're talking about politics. And you can listen to world music on Sunday. There's all kinds of wonderful stuff on Co-op Radio brought to you by very knowledgeable people who really know what they're doing and do it because they really like doing it. They're all volunteers. But mostly, there are people who are real authorities, real experts in what they do. So why don't you give us a call at 684-8494.
Yes, thank you, Alan. And you know, we have a few notices here. One of them is that Stephen Staples will be on the Red Eye tomorrow at 10:05. And he has counted the dollars Canada has spent on its war in Afghanistan. And he tells us what each household has contributed. One of my favorite radio programs, Red Eye, on Saturday mornings. And at 11:05 tomorrow, Saturday, the environmental journalist Stephen Lee reports on estimates that the U.S. is subsidizing oil companies to the tune of $39 billion a year. So, and we have just one short notice now. I believe we have our next guest in the line. The Zuchek will be, Rob Laidlaw will be speaking at the Vancouver Public Library at 6 p.m. That is on the Wednesday, I'm not quite sure which day that is, and 6 p.m. Anyway, zucheck.ca. So that's Rob Laidlaw at the Vancouver Public Library. Well,
so I have this little presentation by Jane Goodall queued up. It's fairly short, so do you want to hear that now?
We have our next guest
Your
on
next
the line.
Your next guest is on the line. So would you rather chat with the next guest first, and then we'll hear Jane Goodall afterwards, all right?
Sure, and okay. We'll keep people waiting to hear Dr. Jane Goodall.
And it's worth the wait. It's worth the wait. So stay tuned. And remember, once again, that this is Co-op Radio's membership drive. We really need you to support us. Join us. Join Co-op Radio. Become a part of Co-op Radio. Take a step into supporting your community and your community radio by giving us a call right now at 684-8494, area code 604. You can pay by Visa, MasterCard, or we'll send you a package with a return envelope, and you can send in a check. And the membership is $60, but you can pay whatever suits your pocketbook. 684-8494, and back to Carl.
Yes, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM. Our program is many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org, which will be including this wonderful program with Jane Lawton. And, of course, today also, we have somewhat unusual, but no less remarkable, is that we have Suleiman, who is a world's event psychic, spiritual receiver, lover of animals. Welcome to Animal Voices, Suleiman.
It's a pleasure, Carl, to be on the show.
Well, you know, Suleiman, I started off the program by reading a quote from Pope Benedict about the possibility that that animals also have souls, and I believe you're quite familiar with that topic.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, when you read the Bible and you read Genesis in the Bible, God did not only create Adam and Eve, but He created all animals and allowed Adam, you know, to name the animals. Therefore, the same spark of life, the same spiritual essence that went into the creation of a human being, mankind, womankind, childrenkind, also was manifested by our Creator for animals, and all life forms on this planet possess a spirit and a soul.
Now, how do you, how do you come to that conclusion? Maybe you can enlarge on that a bit.
Exactly. All right. Number one, I want to thank you for allowing me to come on the show today, and I want all of your listeners out there, while you're listening to the show, get on the phone and call your mother, your father, your sisters, your brothers, aunts and uncles, children, because this is a blessed opportunity for all of the listeners this particular day, because it's a show that's going to bring a lot of happiness and joy and spiritual understanding to your listeners. Number two is that when Carl introduced me as a world event psychic and spiritual receiver, to let you know that I know somewhat of what I'm talking about. I predicted 9/11, and that is documented at KNBC in Los Angeles. I predicted the re-election of George Bush. I predicted that Condoleezza Rice would become the new Secretary of State in the USA. And it's interesting that you opened up the show with Pope Benedict XVI, because when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, I was the only one on the planet that made the prediction that he would become the new Pope. In saying that, and being a spiritual receiver, I have had the opportunity in my 63 years on this particular planet to be involved in a lot of spiritual experiences. The most endearing, the most loving, basically have been with animals, dogs and cats and birds and horses. And I have discovered, as most people that have a close association with these angelic animal companions, they realize in a very short period of time that they have spirits and souls, and that we walk the earth with sinless companions. Your dogs and cats that you have domesticated and in your homes, who love you dearly and they love you unconditionally, you are in association with life forms that are basically sinless, and they are basically teachers. Now, there needs to be a definition, Carl, in regards to spirit and soul. And basically this comes from the Britannica Dictionary. Spirit, an animating or vital principle held to give life to physical organisms. Supernatural being or essence, the immaterial, intelligent, or sentient part of a person, the activating or essential principle influencing a person or animal. That is the definition of a spirit. The definition of a soul, which is quite different but definitely related, is the immaterial essence, animating principle, or the activating cause of an individual, human being, or animal. And it concerns itself with the moral and emotional nature of both human beings and animals. The spiritual aspect is the spark of life that comes from God. It is His essence. The soul is the mind apparatus and the spiritual combination that gives it a form similar to human form, but when you pass from the material realm into the spiritual realm, you still maintain this particular physical form, which is the essence of your physical form, but which is a soul, and the spirit is the soul of your soul that comes from God itself. With that explanation, all life form on the planet possesses a soul, and dogs and cats and birds and raccoons and beautiful animals of all sorts, they possess a spirit and a soul, and they are intelligent. For instance, there's a magazine that is publicized and is published and sent all over the world, and it's called Woman's World Magazine. And probably many of your listeners, both men and women out there that are listening to the show today, have access to it. Well, every month when that magazine comes out, Carl, there's a plethora of stories and pictures in regards to all type of beautiful animals that you've ever seen on your life. And today, in this kind of gray, dreary weather that we're having in Vancouver and over the state of Washington, Oregon, I'm going to ask your listeners to go to the website. It's called Mr. Winkle, WINKLE.com. And Mr. Winkle, I'm looking at his little cute picture right now. He was a cute little dog, looks like a little bitty teddy bear. And he was found on the side of a freeway by this magnificent woman. And today the little dog's a millionaire because of his picture. And every time someone goes to the website and looks at the picture of Mr. Winkle, that's WINKLE.com, a spiritual, positive feeling of happiness overcomes every individual because of the happiness and joy that emanates from this particular little soul. And I have several different stories here, Carl, in regards to animals, dogs and cats and birds, horses that have changed the lives of people. For instance, there are stories that says if you want to have a happiness booster in your life, go to your animal companion, your dog or your cat or your bird. Even if the animal has passed into the heavenly realm, because I thoroughly believe that, you can take the picture of your beloved animal and you look at it, and instantaneously your particular spirit and soul is encompassed with this feeling of good cheer and happiness, and it removes depression, it removes anxiety, and it shows you that we have a very strong and positive connection between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom, because we are all connected with the God kingdom. There are stories too, Carl, where pictures of animals and dogs and cats and birds and horses and other type of animals that you have in your home actually are used to heal the physical body. For instance, when a cat purrs and you touch a cat, that purring aspect actually heals the body. It lowers the cholesterol levels in the body. It causes the heart to beat rhythmically in a very, very gentle and soft passion, and it causes a spiritual essence around the body that is clean and basically calm. People that have dogs and cats that walk their dogs or run their dogs, they have a companionship there for the physical healing of their particular body, and these individuals discover when they're out running or walking, it is also a spiritual connection, because on many occasions, those dogs will protect their owners, even to the point of giving their lives. There's an interesting story that I was reading just recently, Carl. It's called How Pet Saves the Lives of Human Beings, and how, through their unconditional love for us, they will sacrifice their lives. There was a story that took place in the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago a few years ago, where a three-year-old boy fell into the gorilla's cage. And it was a female gorilla that went over, picked up the three-year-old boy, and protected the child from the other gorillas in that particular cage area, and picked the child up and walked the child to the door where the keeper of that particular zoo was allowed to open up the door and pick up the child. Not only does it show intelligence, but it shows compassion, it shows mercy. That comes from this particular animal in having a soul connection with the Godhead. There's the story here about a parrot that had been left in a closet, a dark closet, for several years. After the parrot was rescued and went into a home that had rescued the parrot in turn, within 6 months, saved the lives of every man, woman, and child and animal in the house when the house caught on fire, and this parrot kept yelling, "Fire extinguisher, fire extinguisher, there's a fire in the house," and saved everybody. There are cats and dogs that have the gift, spiritual gift, to know whether or not their owner has cancer or not. A lot of these stories have to do with cats that will go up to, especially a woman, and nudge on the woman's breast or even scratch it to the point where it becomes annoying to the woman, and then the woman realizes there might be a problem, and she goes and she has a medical checkup and finds out that there's a problem. Animals are gifted teachers. They're divine communicators, and they...
Now, thank you, Suleiman, for distinguishing between spirit and soul. I was never aware of that. But now, the spirit, of course, it's not only what we've now seen as the Catholic Church speaking out about the possibility that these animals could have soul. Why not? If humans have it, why should not be our kindred species? But of course, the Hindu religion, I mean, it's also accept reincarnation. How does that fit in with how you see the relationship with the animals and the spirit world?
Okay, you know what, Carl? I want to let your audience know. Yesterday, Carl called me to confirm the opportunity of being on this very, very blessed show. Show is extremely unique and should be heard all over the world. And Carl, I ever win that multi-million-dollar lottery, I'm going to make sure your show goes all over the world.
Thank you.
Okay. Carl, would you tell the listening audience the story you told me about your relative that passed away in Egypt and what transpired, and about the animals?
Yeah, well, actually, it was right here in Vancouver, but she was lived most of her life in Egypt. And it was my Aunt Tina, and she was... had a heart attack, and she was declared clinically dead in the hospital in New Westminster. And somehow or other, she came back to life. And when she came back, all her relatives were, "What, Tina, what was it like to be declared clinically dead?" So she said, "Oh, it was wonderful. I saw all my aunties and my uncles, my grandparents from Egypt. And you know what? I also saw all our pets and animals that we had in the big house in Cairo." So, you know, I'm with you in so much of this because of a personal experience here with Tina.
Well, let me tell you something. Tina was exactly accurate in regards to not only seeing her family members on the other side, the heavenly side, but animals. There are books that your listening audience needs to go and find. They can find them in the library or a bookstore. One is called Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady. And Betty Eady had several near-death experiences, and she speaks about not only speaking with Jesus Christ in heaven, but coming in contact with all these magnificent, beautiful animals. And she speaks about a realm when we pass over to the other side, we have the opportunity to go to various schools on the other side. And one of the biggest schools that most angelic beings like is the school that teaches companionship with the animal kingdom. And Carl, I believe you probably graduated with a PhD from that school. Also, there are books by... there's a psychic called Sylvia Brown. And Sylvia Brown emphatically makes the statement that every time she has these experiences of crossing over, and hers are not near-death experiences, the first contact that she has on the spiritual side are her own animals. And she says it's the most glorious reception that a soul can have. There are other authors out there that have written books, and you can go to Google, type in books and authors that believe that animals have souls. You will be astounded at the numerous books that have been written alleging the fact that individuals passing over, the first contact made on the other side, are their loved ones. In my own life, since I've been here in Canada, when I came to the United States, I brought two beautiful Bichon Frises with me. One was Buff, who was 2 months shy of 18, and he passed 6 weeks after I was here, and it broke my heart. And I kept hearing, Carl, in my mind, I am here, I am here. And what I discovered was that not only had Buff passed, but he had decided to remain at my side instead of passing over into the heavenly kingdom. And till this day, he is right here with me. I communicate with him. And Fifi, my beloved daughter, Bichon, passed away 14 months ago. Both of them died in my arms. And she made the decision to stay with me. And Joan Irene Smith is the landlord of this particular home that I live in. And she is a very loving person and loves animals. She's got cats here that she brought from Salmon Arms. And her grandson, Spencer, they love them to death. And her niece named Donna in Salmon Arms, she would visit here. And after the third year, she came on Christmas and she said, "Suleiman, where is the second dog? I see Fifi, but where's your second dog?" She actually saw over those two-year periods when she would come during the holidays, Buff. And she's a very spiritual person, and Buff had actually materialized in front of her. I will give your listening audience a gift right now to let them know that what I'm telling you is true. I communicate with my dogs, and I call them the Royal Heavenly Flying Corps. And I communicate with them every day. And what I do is like Woman World magazine, because it's filled with so many positive stories and pictures, and other magazines. In my room at night, just before I go to bed, the Royal Heavenly Flying Corps, Buff and Fifi and them, they will give me messages. They will say, "Dad, go and pick up such and such book, turn to such and such page, and you will be astounded at the messages that are given to you." It is absolutely magnificent. When your listeners go to bed at night and they clear their mind and they're on their beds, simply ask their loved animal, angelic animal companion to communicate with them. They say their name. They ask them either to come into a dream, so forth and so on. And after a short period of time, it will occur. And all of us that are involved with these angelic beings that have very powerful spirits and are sinless beings, when we pass over from this world, they are the first ones to meet us. When that happens, you know that you're in the right place, that you're in heaven. I think it's going to be kind of tough for people that don't have animals, because when they pass over and they're not greeted by animals, they might question where they are. But those of us that have loving animals, we know exactly where we are.
Now, Suleiman, we have about 2 minutes left here, but before we finish off, I'm going to have a quote from the Bible.
Sure.
And another one by Tyler Durden. I'm going to ask you to comment on that. But Marge Adams has a co-host. She has a question for you.
Well, I had a question from one of our constant listeners, Dalton Gracie, but I think you have just answered it. Her question was, how do you personally know animals have an afterlife? And you have told us that. And I was curious about whether or not the animals share the same heaven, but you've also told us that.
They definitely do. You know what? They in all the books that I have mentioned, not only do they, there's a book that everyone out there should get. It's called Heaven is So Real by Chew Thomas. And Chew Thomas allegedly had 17 visitations in heaven taken by Jesus Christ, and she was taken to a valley in heaven where every life form that we have on the planet from the animal kingdom exists, but they love each other. There's no viciousness, no preying of animal on animal. And she said it was one of the most wonderful places that she visited in heaven, and they definitely exist there.
Thank you, Suleiman. Now, the two quotes, and we just have a few very short minutes left. The two quotes are, if you can comment briefly on them,
sure.
And it comes from Job 12:7. It says, "But ask now the beasts, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee, or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee." Maybe just a quick quote on that one, your comments on that, Suleiman.
All right. Number one is that what they are saying is, during the end time, which we are in now, watch and stay close to your animals, because they will be the ones that are going to guide you into the light. And listen to them, because while you're in your sleep state and dream state, whether they have passed over or not, they will be communicating with you and teaching you. And those of you who want to get a loving animal right now, go to the Urban Puppy Shop on 4th and Hemlock. They've got the most magnificent spiritual animals, because the people that run the place are so spiritual and loving, just like you, Carl, and your co-host.
Okay, and the other quote in closing off here is from a Jesuit priest, Teilhard de Chardin, who wrote a book called The Phenomenon of Man, and he said, "We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience."
That is completely and totally correct. Everyone that's listening to your show must realize that we come from the Godhead. We are spiritual first. Everything that God had created in the beginning is spirit. This is nothing more than a material dimension. And when we come into the world and individuals end up in association with a particular pet, that pet left the heavenly realm and the spiritual realm to be with you in the material realm, and your association with your pets are limitless, and they are eternal, and they are blessed.
Thank you, Suleiman, for being on Animal Voices and explaining it so clearly. And you have us with you.
God bless you, and you have me with me. And listen to me. May God bless you and bless your show. It needs to go worldwide. And I'm going to tell you, Carl, I'm going to have a big pot of money coming, and I'm going to help you out.
Thank you, Suleiman.
God bless you here.
And bye for now.
Bye now.
And you've been listening to Suleiman on Animal Voices. Our webpage is animalvoices.org. And, we've promised to play you the cut from Dana Lyons and Dr. Jane Goodall, which referred to our first interview with Jane Lawton from the Jane Goodall Institute. Over to you, Alan.
Okay, yes, this is a relatively short, but it's so good. It seems like a long time when you hear this, just because it is such a wonderful little story told by Jane Goodall. I'll remind you that we have a couple of incentives for the fund drive. If you support the Animal Voices show today, we have a couple of very good books. One is called Building an Ark, by Ethan Smith with Guy Nancy, and it has a foreword by Jane Goodall. You can have that if you take out a membership at Co-op Radio at any level. Also, we have a really good book. This is very interesting. A Stain Upon the Sea, West Coast Salmon Farming, with articles in it by Alexandra Morton, Stephen Hume, a number of other people, and forwards by David Suzuki and Terry Glavin. So if you'd like either of those books, give us a call quick now at 684-8494 and support Co-op Radio. Take out a membership and keep community radio on the air so you can keep hearing great programs like the Animal Voices Show and all the others. So we'll leap now to Jane Goodall and her story.
This is the story of Satan and Sprout. One day I was following Satan through the forest, 23 years old, a young male in his prime. He got his name when he was just a kid. He actually stole a manuscript that my mother was writing, and we had to bribe him with a banana to get the chewed remains back again. But that was long ago. And now he's traveling alone, and suddenly he hears ahead of him the sounds of an excited group of chimpanzees feeding, clearly on something delicious. Imagine this with 20 chimpanzees, all making the same excited cries. Satan's hair bristles with excitement, and he hastens along the trail, and soon comes to a big tree. There's a lot of fruit up there and many chimpanzees feeding. And he swings up the trunk and he aims for a large bunch of ripe red fruit. There's a younger male feeding there already, but that's okay because Satan is dominant to him. So he approaches and he makes a arm threat gesture. The young male screams and backs away and Satan begins to feed. But what Satan didn't realize is that young male's older brother is feeding higher up in the tree. And hearing his kid brother scream, he comes swinging down, and now the two brothers start attacking Satan, and Satan screams. To my amazement, a very ancient female, who was peacefully feeding way up in the canopy, starts swinging down, and she hurls her frail self onto these three battling males, each of whom weighs at least twice as much as she. And with her puny little fist, she begins hitting at the two brothers, who I think are so surprised that they mildly threaten her, and Satan gets away. That was Satan's ancient mother, Sprout, probably at least 50 years old, hair thin, teeth worn down to the gums, but still running to the defense of her great big bully son.
That's it. Yeah, and Alan, tomorrow is Media Democracy Day.
Indeed it is.
Co-op Radio will be at the Vancouver Public Library.
At the Central Library, yes. There's all kinds of things going on all afternoon and into the evening tomorrow as part of Media Democracy Day. Co-op Radio and the other the radio stations from Simon Fraser and UBC will be there also. And all kinds of other people from alternative media and probably some mainstream media people too. But it's a big event, and it doesn't cost anything. You can just go down to the main library tomorrow starting at around noon, and you'll find all kinds of good stuff happening. And you can check out Co-op Radio's table. You could probably even join Co-op Radio down there if you don't do it today, but why not give us a call today and do that in advance? And so you can take part in Media Democracy, because if there's such a thing as democratic media, it is here on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. We are totally democratic. Everything, you know, the people, the structure of our station, the structure of the programs and the programming, there's no top-down stuff happening around here like there is on commercial radio stations or on private radio stations. So support Co-op Radio, support democratic media, and as Carl said, tomorrow is Media Democracy Day.
And there will be celebration of Media Democracy Day with the Workless Party. So go to the Workless Party webpage, and tomorrow night at 1965 Main Street, that's Main and Third, so there'll be celebrations there. And I will be on SFU radio tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and also talking about democracy and food. And what one of the really wonderful quotes about that Francis Moore LaPaix did was about a shortage of democracy, not food. And she says in her book Diet for a Small Planet that it came to reveal to her that the root of the world hunger is not a lack of food, but a lack of democracy, because no human being chooses hunger. Hunger is proof that a person has been denied a voice in meeting survival needs. And since a say is... that's tomorrow. Well, thank you for listening to Animal Voices. Our webpage is animalvoices.org. And so many events, including Rob Laidlaw at the Vancouver Public Library on Wednesday.
It's after 1 o'clock. We have to bail out of here right away. So this has been Animal Voices. Remember the phone number.